actually follow us on Ustream. Forget about it tonight. There is another problem with Ustream. Welcome to tonight's program, 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. You remember, how long ago was it that the Obama administration ordered the assassination of American citizen Anwar al-Awlaki? When was it? Was that last week? The Department of Justice explained that they have a secret memo, and they produced it just prior to al-Awlaki's assassination. They won't release it, though. And at theatlantic.com, just a quickie about this, anonymous sources quoted by the Washington Post say the following. Quote, the Justice Department wrote a secret memorandum authorizing the lethal targeting of Anwar al-Awlaki, the American-born radical cleric who was killed by a U.S. drone strike last Friday, according to administration officials. That's what the Washington Post says. They go on. Quote, the document was produced following a review of the legal issues raised by striking a U.S. citizen and involved senior lawyers from across the administration. There was no dissent about the legality of killing al-Awlaki, the officials said. End quote. So reported the New York or the Washington Post. So that it certainly is interesting, isn't it? Months ago, the Obama administration revealed that it would target al-Awlaki. It even managed to get out of a lawsuit filed by the man's father. Remember that? To prevent the assassination. That's kind of weird, isn't it? Filing a lawsuit to prevent the U.S. government from assassinating your son, who happens to be an American citizen. Now, you know, let me just back up a second. Is al-Awlaki someone that the American government should fear? Well, yeah, of course. But if you want to take it beyond that and discover where, you know, what are the roots of the fear? Where does the fear come from? What initiated action by people around the globe that has now produced fear inside the hearts and minds of, the American administration, certainly most Americans who travel outside the country, there's always that chance. And inside the country now, right? But you can only go back so far, and then you lose your audience. Everybody says, oh, well, you know, that was a long time ago. What about right now? Anyway, his father had filed a lawsuit to prevent the assassination, and the Obama administration managed to wriggle out of that one. But as the Atlantic reports, the actual legal reasoning of the Department of Justice, The legal reasoning that they used to authorize the strike, guess what? It's secret. Classified. Information that the public isn't permitted to read, think about, or challenge. How about that? Huh? Now, it raises the question, why? What justification can there be for President Obama and his lawyers to keep secret what they're saying is a matter of sound law? They're perfectly within the legal parameters set up in this country, within their legal rights to order the assassination, the killing of an American citizen. With no trial, no arrest, nothing. It is within the rights of the U.S. Justice Department, the U.S. administration, to do this. Now, this isn't some kind of a military secret. It isn't an instance of protecting CIA field assets. It isn't an instance of shielding a domestic vulnerability to terrorism from public view. As The Atlantic says, this is an analysis of the power that the Constitution and Congress, after the September 11th authorization of military force, gives the executive branch. This is a president exploiting official secrecy so that he can claim legal justification for his actions without having to expose his specific reasoning to scrutiny. And as the Washington Post put it, quote, the administration officials refused to disclose the exact legal analysis used to authorize targeting al-Awlaki or how they considered any Fifth Amendment right to due process, end quote. due process. Due schmasses. Now, as The Atlantic points out, Obama, with this action, hasn't just set a precedent about killing Americans without due process. He has done it in a way that deliberately shields from public view the precise nature of this important precedent that he set. So isn't it time for the president who promised to create, quote, a White House that's more transparent and accountable than anything we've seen before, end quote. That's Barack Obama on the campaign trail. Isn't it time for him to release the Department of Justice memo so we can all see this is nothing's at risk here. Nothing. No assets, as the article says. They're not a military secret. National security is not at stake. This is the inner workings of the Justice Department and the Obama, or is it the Bush administration, deciding here is our legal reasoning. Here is how we've made a decision that we can, at will, target and murder an American citizen in a foreign country, any place, as soon as we find him. Now, again, going back to Awolaki, a lot of people will say, well, Malloy, you're just a naive freak. This man was a definite threat. What would you do, Malloy, if somebody's standing outside your house threatening to murder your family? Is that what Awolaki was doing? If someone's standing out in front of my house threatening to murder my family and I shot him dead, I'd go to prison for second-degree murder. So there's a quick answer to that. As David Shipler writes, quote, the legal questions are far from clear-cut and the country needs to have this discussion, end quote. And then there's the fact that, quote, a good many Obama supporters thought that secret legal opinions by the Justice Department, rationalizing torture and domestic military arrests, for example, had gone out the door along with the Bush administration, end quote. But now comes this change in policy with serious implications for the Constitution's restraint on executive power. And Obama refuses to allow his lawyers' arguments to be laid out on the table for the American public to examine. So, the last question. What doesn't Obama want the American people to see? Now, the caller from San Diego last week would, if he's listening tonight, and he probably is, even though he sent me an email, said he'd never listen again. But his argument was, there are certain things the American public should not know that our government does. And for the life of me, I can't think of one thing. Certainly not extrajudicial murder, for Christ's sake. To go inside another country and find an American citizen. Now, you can make an argument against a non-national. You can make an argument that says, okay, we're going to go assassinate Osama bin Laden. And you can argue that till hell freezes over. Osama bin Laden's not an American citizen. He doesn't have the same constitutional protection that every American citizen used to have. But God damn sure doesn't anymore. So who's next? Who's next? Who will this administration or the next one or the one after that decide is such a threat that he or she needs to be targeted for assassination and killed? Period. End of story.
Silver spoon in hand. Murphy. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. And you know what's amazing to me? These teabag bastards and the right-wingers and the Republicans and you know, the scum in this country. Nobody raises this issue about extra judicial killing, just going out and murdering somebody. They will scream about Obama being a socialist. They will scream about Obama not having been born in this country. Anything to please their brain-dead audience. But when it comes to an exercise like this, silence. You know, they love it because, you know, a precedent has now been set. And who's going to challenge this? Is somebody going to bring this this murder before a federal court to find out if what Obama did is within the purview of the executive branch? Yeah, don't hold your breath. I can't get it out of my mind. I mean, okay, I'm sure there are a lot about Alaki that I have no idea about. I'm sure he was just a bad dude, just waiting for the first opportunity to come over here and murder all the babies in America and bring down buildings and blow up everything. Right? I mean, that's how the people that are targeted by the CIA, that's usually how they are described. Oh, this guy's a potential mass murderer. Well, a potential mass murderer? So you execute him because he's a potential... What? And because the so-called shoe bomber that couldn't find his ass with both hands because in questioning the shoe string or the underwear or whatever the hell... No, I guess with the underwear bomber, right? The underwear bomber... Oh, my God. Where am I? The underwear bomber who just, I don't know, nothing worked and, you know, the plane landed. Somehow that ties back to Alaki. So kill him. You know, kill him. And I know a lot of people in this country can justify that murder. That very easily. Apparently the Obama administration was able to justify it. Now, of course, it's a big ass secret now. They won't tell us how. What was the justification? How did they cancel the Fifth Amendment? How did they do that? How they cancel the Fifth Amendment? Canceling various amendments, the Constitution, though, is becoming corporate America / political America sport. You know, the Constitution and the first 10 amendments, they were written for people who were involved in self-governance. We're not there anymore. So let's just, you know, I mean, there's no reason for me to sit here and bitch and moan and whine and cry about an American citizen gets blown away on a road somewhere in Yemen by executive order of the United States. You know, what are you bitching about, Malloy? That's now. What are you talking about? The Bill of Rights, the First Ten Amendments, the Fifth Amendment? Oh, please! Yeah, I don't know why so many of us still kind of pretend that document has any meaning anymore. I mean, George Bush called it a goddamn piece of paper. Oh, my. Occupy America is opening up a new branch on Thursday in Washington, D.C. It is October2011.org is where you can get the information. But a new branch of Occupy Everywhere. And again, I'm constantly tickled the way media continues to screech and demand and claw at the air about who are these people? What are your demands? What do you want? Where are you going? Who's leading you? What's going to happen? How do you turn this into a political force? How do you do something with this? Who are you? What's your name? Where are you from? Why are you here? Get a job! Right? It just, well, I have in front of me from the home office in an undisclosed location, a proposed list of demands from the Occupy Wall Street movement. It's a proposed list of demands. And I'm going to share them with you when we come back from this break. I saw an interesting letter to the editor in the New York Times today talking about the Wall Street occupiers. Written by a guy in New York. 80 years ago, the American economy was in crisis created by our boom-bust financial system. 20 years after some progressive legislation and a global conflict, we'd managed to balance capitalism with a new social contract, and America became the most productive nation on earth. Workers enjoyed world-class educations, job security, good pay, health care, and secure pensions. The highest tax rate back then was 90%, and the ratio of executive to worker pay was 24 to 1. Over the last few decades, the social contract has unraveled. Productivity per work hour has increased dramatically, but workers' wages have been stagnant, while corporate profits have skyrocketed, and executive pay is now hundreds of times the average employee's. We the people can't wait 20 years. We do want progressive legislation now. Okay. Proposed list of demands from the Occupy Wall Street movement. I don't know who put this together. I don't even know if it's real. But, you know, media want something. They all the reporters and writers and anchor people. And what do they want? They don't have any leaders. What is this about? Where are they going? So let's toss this out. Demand number one. Restoration of the living wage. This demand can only be met by ending so-called free trade, by reimposing trade tariffs on all imported goods entering the American market to level the playing field for domestic family farming and domestic manufacturing, as most nations that are dumping cheap products onto the American market have radical wage and environmental regulation advantages. Another policy that must be instituted is raise the minimum wage to $20 an hour. Demand number two. Institute a universal single-payer healthcare system. To do this, all private insurers must be banned from the healthcare market, as their only effect on the health of patients is to take money away from doctors, nurses, and hospitals, preventing them from doing their jobs and handing that money to Wall Street investors. Demand number three. Guaranteed living wage income regardless of employment. Demand number four. A free college education. Demand number five. Begin a fast-track process to bring the fossil fuel economy to an end, while at the same time bringing the alternative energy economy up to energy demand. Demand six. $1 trillion in infrastructure spending now. That will include water, sewer, rail, roads and bridges, and electrical grid. Demand seven, $1 trillion in ecological restoration, planting forests, reestablishing wetlands, and the natural flow of river systems, and decommissioning all of America's nuclear power plants. Demand number eight, racial and gender equal rights amendment. Demand number nine, open borders migration. Anyone can travel anywhere to work and live. Number 10. bring American elections up to international standards of a paper ballot precinct counted and recounted in front of an independent observer system. Boop, 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 boop. Demand 11. Immediate across-the-board debt forgiveness for everybody. Debt forgiveness of sovereign debt, commercial loans, home mortgages, home equity loans, credit card debt, student loans, personal loans. Now, all debt must be stricken from the books. World Bank loans to all nations, bank-to-bank debt, and all bonds and margin call debt, and the stock market, including all derivatives or credit card or credit default swaps, all $65 trillion of them must also be stricken from the books. And we don't mean debt that is in default. We mean all debt. Period. Demand 12, outlaw all credit reporting agencies. Demand 13, allow all workers to sign a ballot at any time during a union organizing campaign or at any time that represents their yay or nay to having a union represent them in collective bargaining or to form a union. Conclusion? These demands will create so many jobs, it will be completely impossible to fill them without an open borders policy. So there you go. There's a proposed list of demands. It's either for or from the Occupy Wall Street movement. Who knows? It's either written by somebody who is operating on a lone wolf or single bullet theory, or it was written by a committee. It's either written by somebody who's just cutting up or somebody who is absolutely serious. Who knows? Kind of like when the Obama administration comes up with legal justification to murder an American citizen on foreign soil. I mean, who knows? Kind of like Dick Cheney and his energy policy. Who knows? Not that this list of demands is pro-fascist the way these two presidents operate. Oh, wait a minute. Cheney wasn't president, was he? Well, yes, he was. No. This is just a tad different. These are demands for, of, and by the people. But who knows where they came from? Who knows? Guaranteed living wage income regardless of employment. Didn't Nixon have that idea at one point, a guaranteed living wage? Wasn't that originally a Dick Nixon idea? God. So if anyone says to you, what do they want? You can refer them to the list I just gave you. There you go. Do. Anybody know who Pam Geller is? Do you know? She is a blogger, an author, a political activist, a commentator. She is known primarily for her criticisms of the religion of Islam and opposition to Muslim activities and causes, such as, remember the proposed construction of the Islamic Community Center near the former site of the World Trade Center? she's a right-wing Likudnik. She is very pro-Israel at the expense of anyone who gets in the way. In January last year, she founded something, or co-founded something called the Freedom Defense Initiative Organization with a guy named Robert Spencer. And, I mean, she's about as far right-wing as it is possible to get and still remain sane. So what Why am I bringing up Pam Geller? When she was in the news all the time, you know, when she had her 15 minutes, I never paid that much attention to her. Just another loudmouth, a pro-Israel, anti-everything else, radical right-wing, or reactionary right-wing freak who was loved dearly by, all the right-wing jokers on radio and television, and the Rupert Murdoch anti-American terror organization used to put her on, Well, she has associated herself with another anti-Muslim activist named John Joseph Jay. This is a Think Progress. I don't know. You can listen to this and then wonder why Obama doesn't target this guy, John Joseph Jay. He has issued a call for the mass murder of the leadership of both parties in Congress, the governors of seven states, prominent academics. He also has a demand to, quote, burn all mosques, period. Now, Mr. Jay is he helped in the founding of the Pam Geller's group, American Freedom Defense Initiative, and that's an umbrella organization of the prominent Stop the Islamization of America. Jay's signature can be seen below those of Pam Geller and fellow anti-Muslim activist Robert Spencer. But this is what this guy is advocating, all right? And it's right out there for anyone to see it. Take out the talking head media and burn the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Washington Post to the ground. Draw and quarter the media. Shoot their remains from cannons in the four directions of the prevailing winds. Rinse, lather, repeat is needed. Kill all the incumbent leadership of both parties in the Congress and every self-avowed socialist and communist in Congress. Give them all proper Muslim burials at sea, just like Osama bin Laden. Eliminate pensions for congressional service. 3, eliminate the faculty senates at Harvard, Yale, Columbia, NYU, and University of California at Santa Barbara. Boil Bill Ayers, Bernadine Dorn, and Angela Davis in oil and feed their remains to the fish. Let me see. This guy's a goddamn psychopath. Now that the Arab Spring has brought enlightenment to the Middle East, send all of the Muslim immigrants back to their native countries in boxes. In a postscript, he adds that he wants to burn the editors and contributors to Daily Kos. Throw the living governors of New York, California, Ohio, Illinois, Washington, Florida, and Massachusetts into the fiery pits from which there is no escape. Ohio? We'll be right back.
Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malone.
Here come the woman with a look in her eye. Wrist on leather with flesh on the line.
10 before the hour.
Words, weapons, sharpened knives. Makes you wonder how the other half died.
So, where was I? Gosh, I guess I just forgot what I was talking about. The Occupy Wall Street movement is now entered its 18th day this morning. And it's, like I mentioned earlier in the program, it is spreading. As people are making a statement now that the corporate ownership of this country and therefore the corporate destruction of this country has got to stop. If it's not going to stop, there is going to be some serious problems. And it's not going to be problems initiated by this freak I was just quoting, this Pam Geller-associated half-wit. There will be serious problems in that. And this is what corporate America doesn't believe, that the machine will be stopped. And until that happens, and I think that's what we're building towards, we're not building toward an invasion of the Pentagon. We're not building toward armed insurrection in the streets. The authorities have pretty much made it clear that that is always a possibility here in corporate-controlled America. Capitalists will stop at nothing to maintain the kind of order that they want. And trust me, they want order. But that's not the goal here. Not yet. The goal is not to, do an Abby Hoffman, surround the Pentagon and try to levitate it. That's not, the goal here is not to interfere in the lives of people who are just trying to, have a life. The objective is to tell the machine and the people running it that the machine is going to be brought to a stop one way or another. Now, I know that sounds very, very, what's the word I'm looking for, Kathy? Very, almost fairy tale-like, a kind of juvenile, kind of maybe like your parents saying, "Now you stop that!" It just doesn't quite compute to the capitalist overlords that there is a movement starting whose real objective is to end their stranglehold on everything. Now, when the question is asked, if somebody asks me in D.C., if somebody sticks a microphone in my face and says, "Well, why are you here? What's the objective?" That's my answer. It is to end the operation of the machine that's destroying us. And not just us, destroying the whole planet and the planet. These sons of bitches are, this is murder, efficient beyond any mass killers, even beyond the real mass killers of history. This is out there so far into the land of Crazyville. They are destroying the whole planet. Son of a bitch! So the machine, you see, has to be brought to a stop. It has to. And enough sand has to be poured into the gears, sand and broken glass and chunks of metal, that the machine will not be able to start up again. This is what Mario Savio was talking about in 1964. But like we talked about the other night, the movement began. It really started to chunk along. And then, of course, the leaders and the objectives and the plans and the dreams and the hopes were identified. And then they were isolated. And then they were co-opted. And then corporate America just figured out, they want a green planet. I know. They're having this Earth Day thing. Let's have every filthy, stinking, rotten, polluting company in America pick one of these groups and we'll sponsor them. Oh, yeah. Here, I know. We're a union bag company. We're a Coke operation. We cut down all kinds of forests and we make paper bags. So let's paint a little green thing on the paper bag and hand it out to school kids all over the country and let them go, pick up trash. Oh, yeah. And that's what happened. That's very simplified, but that's what happened. Corporate America realized that, what's this? So how do you stop a movement? Do you send out the troops? No, not at the beginning. What you do at the beginning is try to co-opt it. And if you succeed, as they succeeded in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, if you succeed, then you've won without a shot fired. Up to this point, they've won. But in winning, they're losing, just like all of us are losing. So it's time to stop the machine. It's very simple. When protesters and demonstrators are asked by somebody who thrusts a microphone in their face or a camera, who are you? What's your leadership? What's your objective? What's your goals? Who organized this? Who's in charge? Who's in charge? Take me to your leader. Who's in charge? Somebody's got to be in charge. There has to be somebody in charge. There has to be someone in charge. And the answer is, we are here because we're sick of having corporate America destroy the country. Well, but yeah, but what do you want to do about it? We want to see the end of corporate control over every aspect of our lives. Yeah, but how are you going to do that? Well, right now, we're going to go dance and beat the drums. And I'll get back to you later on this afternoon. It is 7 past the hour. If you'd like to call in, the number is 877-996-2556. This is the Malloy program. I'll be off tomorrow night, Thursday night, and Friday night. Back Monday coming. I will be in Washington at the Occupy... Or no, wait, what are we... It's October2011.org. It's kind of beginning to look like a merger. There is an organization now that has come active in the past couple of days in D.C. called Occupy Washington. And it's my understanding that they will be joining with the people who represent October2011.org. The thing about a movement like this, once it begins, once it starts, as this one has, it's very difficult to stop it. There is a lot to be said for this kind of a movement. It is risky in that, as I said, once it begins, it's almost unstoppable. I am curious to see how the power in this country, which is completely corporate, every single aspect of power in this country is now corporate. Corporate controlled, corporate owned, dominated by neoliberal capitalism that demands obedience or death. And by death, I mean they will destabilize your country, undercut your current, push you into bankruptcy, institute trade policies that make your farmers die, your factories close, and your middle class disappear. This is, you know, I don't know why it's not understood. I mean, by the general population, a lot of people are beginning to get this. This is absolutely a confrontation that is building here between a system that has damn near destroyed everything and ideas that are creative and productive. I don't know why folks don't understand that this system, this capitalist system, whether it is practiced here or in China, whether it goes by capitalism or fascism or corporatism, that the system has reached a point. Why can't we all come out of this coma? I know a lot of us have, but it's reached a point where it is no longer productive. It is destructive. And there's no going back from that. The system that is in place now, the machine that is running now, has to be stopped. It is just so clear. It has to be stopped. It cannot be reformed. It must be stopped. There must be truckloads of sand poured into the gears. It must be stopped. And that's what these movements are about. Like I said earlier, it's not about, you know, running down the street with Molotov cocktails. It's not about putting snipers on a roof. It's not about offing police officers. It's not about that. That's what capitalism does. That's what the enemy does. That's what the enemies of the earth do. That's what the enemies of freedom and justice do. That's not what advocates of freedom and justice and a sensible, balanced life. We don't do that. That's what the fascists do. That's what the people who eat power, who love power, that's what they do. They put the snipers on the roof, not us. They invade countries, not us. Why is this difficult for more people to understand? I mean, this is not hard stuff. Come on. Aside from the political, religious brainwashing that has occurred, not just in this country, but all over the place, but we're involved here. Even with that scrubbing of the collective consciousness in this country, even with the narcotics that are pumped into everybody's house every single night, every single day, if you happen to be home, to the point where the narcotics have produced narcolepsy, people just keep falling asleep. What? I don't know. This is not about you know, showing up in the town square and having a smoke-in. This is not about dumping acid in a city water supply. And this is not about levitating the Pentagon. This is about bringing the machine to a halt. Nothing less, nothing more. Just bringing the machine to a grinding halt. And for the people who are just terrified of all this, you know, the little shrieks and squeals, what happens then? Then if the machine comes to a stop, what happens? For the people shrieking and screaming, nothing but absolute panic. But for people who still maintain their minds, their hearts and souls, it's very easy what happens next. You begin the process of putting together a sustainable, just society. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. It's very easy to find out. Just show up at Occupy wherever. I know this is hard. I don't mean to adopt some patronizing, snotty little attitude here. Of the people who are going to squeal and shriek, but you don't need to squeal and shriek. I mean, that's what you've been taught to do. That's what the fear has been about, especially the last decade in this country. The whole consciousness has been saturated with fear. That's what corporate America has injected into us. Not optimism, not hope, not justice, not fun, fear. Every place you look, fear. Oh, my God. They're here. They're there. Here they come. There they go. You really don't have to think that way, and you know that as well as I do. There may be things in our private personal lives that we fear, but this corporate sponsored fear. Remember what we've talked about on this program so many times? Everything, every goddamn thing in this country is now sponsored by corporations. I don't care what it is. They're putting their names on high school football jerseys. They're putting their names on elementary school marquees. They have even branded fear. Can you believe this? So, what are the objectives of the Occupy movement, the October 2011 movement, whatever the movement is called? What's the objective? Very simple. Stopping the machine. Just bring it to a stop.
But then we'll all starve to death.
No, you won't.
We'll all die because the hospitals won't be open.
No, you won't. As a matter of fact, once the machine stops, not only will the hospitals, if that's your worry, be open, but you'll find that the medical care is so much better. And not only will the grocery stores not be empty, but or filled with frankenfood and corporate sludge and slop and garbage that's going to kill you, but you know it won't take long before there'll be real food. I mean, those are just two examples. How many do you want? How many examples do you want? The hour. What did Romney say today when somebody asked him about the Occupy Everywhere movement? He doesn't think it's, he doesn't like it because, you know, he doesn't see any good coming from class warfare. You son of a bitch, Romney. You filthy, filthy man, you. You have been committing class warfare all of your life. As has everyone in your socioeconomic web. He doesn't like class warfare. All right, from Prairie 2. Pennies add up. Ben Bernanke went in front of the Joint Economic Committee of Congress today and painted a pretty bleak picture for them, or rather for the country. Republicans were heartened by the impending collapse of civilization. The Fed chairman told them flat out that the economy is close to faltering and that the Fed is considering taking more direct action besides its current bond swap scheme. He told Congress that without more consumer spending, things will start getting worse, and consumer spending will only happen if they have jobs. He also said flatly that Congress must not make any sharp cuts to spending. Congress must not make any sharp cuts to spending. To listen to the corporate media, you would think he encouraged the Congress to balance a budget by making big cuts to spending, though the clips they run don't show that. Bernanke has been laying the blame for the lack of jobs at the feet of Congress in recent speeches, and when he says Congress, he means Republicans. The Republicans, in turn, renewed their demand that the Fed stop doing anything to stimulate the economy. There aren't a lot of things the Fed can do except do another round of bond buying, or as they call it, QE3. They could pressure the banks to start loaning money by cutting the interest rates that they are paying the banks for depositing money with the Fed ever since the banks collapsed. 3 years ago, the Fed has been loaning money to the bankers at nearly zero interest, at the same time paying them to deposit money with the Fed. A really great investment if you can get in on it. Speaking of sweet deals, Bank of America says it will plow ahead with the $5 a month charge for using your debit card, but they will probably not charge people who have a large balance or a mortgage with them. Other big banks have been experimenting with a $3 a month charge. Bank of America says they have no choice.
We have no choice
but to start charging the excessive fees, since the government is restricting them to charging no more than 22 cents to the merchant for swiping your debit card. The Federal Reserve estimates the cost of a swipe to be no more than 4 cents, and banks have been charging 44 cents per swipe. Consumer groups estimate the cost may be as little as a penny, or 98% profit in the old days, now to be reduced to only 95% profit. But that isn't enough! Never is. Those profit numbers might seem to be too close together to be correct, but we are talking about something that is nearly 100% profit no matter what they charge. Bank of America claims they will lose $2 billion a year in revenue from being restricted to 22 cents a swipe. If only half of their customers pay the $5 a month debit card fee, they will earn, quote, $3 billion. The Senate voted 79-19 to bring the currency manipulator bill aimed at China to the floor for a vote. It's likely that Republicans voted for the bill on the understanding that will die in the House. So-called anti-tax congressmen are determined to not let it pass. China and the usual free trade idiots are screaming about a trade war as if China buys anything from us now. The usual argument again is being trotted out that everything at Walmart will be too expensive if made in the U.S. Well, if you don't have a job or your wages are a third of what they used to be, then everything is already too expensive. The fact is that worker wages, on average, are half what they used to be. That is before outsourcing started 30 years ago. Increased efficiency should translate into higher wages, much higher wages. The fact that they don't is not an accident or a natural occurrence. The 99% are being robbed by the 1%. Get used to it. Or fight back. PrairieNumeral2.com, a.k.a. Bruce Enberg. Thank you, Bruce. Get used to it. Or fight back. My, my. I'm just letting Prairie 2's missive sink in. Sometimes he writes really good ones. We'll be right back with your phone calls. Come on, children, letting history take its course over the graves of the nameless. Not in our name.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike do it for you. It's Mike Malloy.
Into the distance, ribbon of black.
25 before the hour. Let's look at my notes here. Coming up next hour, we're going to... I want to bring into the topic here or into the discussion what I think the movement, the Occupy Everything, and whatever the movement is that's going on right now, that what they need to watch out for. It's not cops running down the street swinging truncheons. Like I mentioned, so many of the movements in the middle of the last century, the last third of the last century, were totally co-opted by the very people against whom the movements were designed to have some effect. And that's a very effective technique. You know, hold your friends closer, hold your friends close, hold your enemies closer, which is what corporate America decided to do with so many populist movements, and therefore they were suffocated before they had a chance to crawl out of the crib. It was pretty grim. Those of you over a certain age, as moi, know exactly what I'm talking about. So many movements, you know, this time, whoop, thud. And a few years ago, another movement. This time, oop, thud. I mean, it just kept happening until it became kind of a joke. This time, oop, thud. Corporate America, the capitalists, have this amazing, I mean, the whole economy is based on public relations and advertising and how to turn people's minds inside out. Somebody comes up with a good idea for social change. Ooh, well, here's what we could do. We can either sick some freak like Breitbart on them, or we can just co-opt the movement altogether, incorporate it into corporate America. Where do you think the word incorporate comes from? Bring it in! So that's what we're going to talk about next hour. And then I'm going to be gone Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Be back next Monday. Brad Friedman will be filling in for me. Thank you, Brad, as he usually does. And we'll see what happens in D.C. For me. Kim is in St. Paul listening on KTNF. Hello, Kim.
Hi, Mike.
How are you?
I'm well.
Good.
All things considered.
Oh, no. This is not going to happen again tonight, is it? Okay, I don't know either, but Kim held on for the better part of 30 minutes, and now another one we lost. What the hell is wrong with our phones? There's a good chance we may be there. Grab those. See if it's Kim. I don't know. It's sometimes... When you lose calls, it can be attributed to, you know, something legit. And then again, sometimes not necessarily so. You know what I'm talking about? Well, let me try. Mike is in Westminster, South Carolina. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Good to talk to you again. Before we get cut off, make sure you give us an update from D.C. to Brad.
Yeah, I'll be calling into Brad. Brad's hosting the program Wednesday night and Thursday night with kind of a last century kind of update. Call the program and let folks know what's going on, you know, that kind of thing. But, yeah, I'll be doing that. Oh, no. We lost him, too. Okay. We'll keep trying. Tim is in Los Angeles. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing really well.
Good.
I'm very, very well, especially, you know, I'm with Occupy Wall Street in Los Angeles now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right, because there are no leaders, there are no, how would you say, no goals, like you say, except to destroy the machine.
Right.
And one such evidence is I joined the LA sessions because I saw what was happening in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people, you know, I was on the internet, I was reading that, you know, they wanted to start one, Occupy Wall Street in LA.
Right.
So about a week before it actually started, I was watching what they were doing in New York and how the cops were treating the people so badly.
Mm-hmm.
I took it upon myself, no one told me to do this because there are no leaders. I took it upon myself to contact the union and tell them what our goals are. And after they got the information about the day the march happened, which was on Saturday, from Pershing Square to City Hall, all the LAPD officers were raising their thumbs up, saying thank you. They were supporting us because we explained to them what the goals are, what we want to accomplish, and that the LAPD are the 99% too.
Yeah,
and that was our goal.
I would think that public employees would especially police officers who, and there's several ways to look at this, of course, but police officers who put themselves on the line, put their lives on the line, and yet when it comes time to collect their pensions for 20 or 30 years of doing that, and you know, I'm not defending anybody or advocating anything. I'm saying this is the reality. As long as we live in a society where we figure that we've got to have police, because if we don't, everybody will steal from everybody, and eventually people will start murdering everybody. Well, you know, when the cop finishes up his 20, 25 years or 30 years, whatever it is, now what corporate America says is screw you, just like they are saying it to people who go out in the armed forces and kill for them. It's just screw you. You want a pension? Too bad. Ha ha. Joke's on you. Go away, big fat man with the high blood pressure and the diabetes. You know, we realize you were a cop all those years and you got to wear the white shirt and you got to carry a gun and a badge, but now it's time to kick you to the curb, just like we kicked the American worker to the curb. Goodbye. Adios. Have a nice life. What's left of it. And I don't know why. But, you know, police don't get that. I mean, this is not hard stuff, Tim. I mean, none of this is hard stuff. All we have to do is look at what's been going on. Hello? So.
Yeah, I think a lot of, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I think a lot of times that no one actually explains it to them. I mean, on their blog, if, you know, the LAPD's union, the Police Protective League, they did a post about how the players in Enron are trying to rip off their pension. They're trying to get their pension and invest it in Wall Street. And I have to explain to them what's going on. And, you know, I'm not just a civilian. I'm not a cop. And tell them that, hey, what you're about to experience, you know, we experience too out here as civilians.
Right.
So again, I tap the union. We explain to them who we are. And they're really, really, really receptive. I mean, we crashed the city hall. We had no permits, nothing. And all the cops are saying, great job, we love you. And the folks at city hall are supporting us.
Well, Tim, three words, and I got to move on. Keep it up. That's great. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you checking in. Mary is in Early Iowa. I think you're still there, right, Mary?
I'm still here.
Okay.
And I wanted to, I'll make it short. I want to tell you about a little experience or disaster I had. I had stopped going some time ago to the Democratic meetings in the next county because I would say what was happening. And at one time I even suggested that we have a march through the streets for the war stoppage. I was kind of treated with contempt. They didn't like me. So I thought, well, about a month ago, I thought, well, now that things are so very, very bad, maybe they'll listen. So I go to this place and where they have the meetings, and it has different rooms. And I see only one door to the back, and it's closed. So, but I see a wooden partition and a glass over, and I see a bunch of people at a table. So I go over to the table, and I sit down, and as usual, I'm late to everything. Some woman was talking, and when she finished, I began with what Obama had done, you know, with the bankers, with the army, and everything that I could think of. And they were very attentive, very, very attentive and polite. And then I suggested, well, you know me, that we primary Obama.
Right.
So this one nice older man said to me, well, are you a Tea Partier? And I said, my God, no, I'm not that stupid.
Hey, Mary, hold on just a second. I got to do some commercials here, and then we'll come back and finish this. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. If you possibly can, it begins Thursday, October 2011, in Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. I will be just one of thousands who will be there. I hope you will. If you are there, come up and say howdy. Back to Mary in early Iowa. All right, so they started listening to you and then wanted to know if you were a
Yes, they listened much more than the other ones, than this other group.
Right.
I didn't, it's the next county because we don't have one. So I knew a couple of them, but they weren't there, but I didn't think so much.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of the Democrats, they weren't there, so I didn't think so much of it. But when this man said to me, very nicely, he said, well, are you a Tea Partier? And, of course, I said, my God, no. I'm not that stupid. And he said, well, are you a Republican? And I said, no. And he said, well, what are you?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm a Democrat. And he said, this is a Republican meeting. They were very, very nice. Sometimes I feel like I'm the perils of Pauline on the railroad track.
I hear that. I hear that, Mary.
Okay, anyway.
Well, you might have won some of them over.
Oh, I think I did.
I think you did, too.
And I wanted to tell you, I'm not done yet. I tried to get people to protest the post office closure,
uh-huh.
And I single-handedly protested the closure of the post office in Burley.
Good for you.
You feel like a dummy standing there,
oh,
but
no.
I did it.
No, you don't. All it takes is one person. No, I mean, yeah, okay, so sometimes you do. I have been at demonstrations where there might be six of us, and you feel very exposed. It's almost like those dreams you have where you're grocery shopping and all of a sudden all your clothes disappear. It's that,
yeah,
that kind of just real vulnerability. I understand what you're saying, Mary, for sure.
But I'll still do it.
Okay.
And you know what? I'll say one more thing.
Okay.
We might have to just have a strike all over the country.
We just might.
Do you really think I'm crazy to think that?
No, I've been thinking that. I've been talking about that on this program for the better part of 2 years, and getting not a whole lot of reaction to it. But now it looks like it may start to happen. Not because I talk about it, but it looks like it may begin. The seeds are being planted, Mary. And it might happen. Mary, let me move on. I got one more caller this hour.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Stay in touch.
I will.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Mary. Take care. You got to love that woman. Derek is in Rincon, New Mexico. Hey,
Mike.
Hey, Derek.
You said some time back Ed Schultz was a big phony baloney, and boy, were you right.
I did? Well, yeah, that was a long time ago. What
well,
now?
He's been doing the same thing. You know, I kind of caught his show today, and he kept saying, well, they don't have a definitive movement, and they don't have this and have that. And what's the point? And are they supporting the president, or are they Democrats? And every time, normally the people that he would speak to, like the heads of some of the unions, and he just couldn't seem to get them to come on board with his way of thinking, you know.
Well, there are a lot of people in this country where understanding a movement like this is just beyond their ability. And some of them are on the radio, some are on television, some of them are in media, other forms of media, the so-called legitimate press. And a lot of politicians, they just don't get it. You know, this is America, and people of a certain age have been brought up a certain way, where there's a power structure, a hierarchy, no matter where you are, no matter what you do. If you work for a television network, if you work for a department store, a grocery store, it doesn't make any difference. There is a power structure, and so many people are unable to see beyond that. So when confronted with something like Occupy Washington, the first question, who's your leader? What's this about? Where are you going? Are you a Democrat? Who are you going to vote for? What's your mama's name? You know, what's your blood type? That is the kind of thinking or reaction that has been produced in this country. And it's a shame that there are people in media who continue to do that. Eventually they'll get it, or they won't. You know what
I'm
saying?
God bless you that you're independent of, you know, because I know he works for MSNBC, and it seems like now he's painted into a corner where he has to sit there and throw the line, you know. And it's just refreshing that you don't have to answer any of these people or your corporate masters.
Not anymore. Of course, that means that you take the risk of not being able to pay next month's mortgage, but that's just the way it goes. Thanks.
Well, you know what? If it's meant to be, it's meant to be, and you just take the high road, and, you know, everything usually turns out fine.
I hear that. Thanks, Derek. I appreciate you checking in. But if you ever see me alongside the interstate near Rincon, New Mexico, with one of those little cardboard signs, you know, you might want to throw a little bit into the hat. Ow! No, I know what he's saying. There are so many people who just cannot get it. And actually, these people who can't get it, aside from the crazy right-wingers and these snot-nosed American traitors like Beck and the rest of these thugs, Limbaugh, who truly hate this country because they hate themselves. But beyond that, you know, people that you would expect to get it. People who present themselves as a Democrat or a liberal or a progressive or, you know, whatever. And they can't get it. And if they do get it, they keep their mouths shut about getting it. Because to do otherwise would put their carefully constructed, you know, house of cards in jeopardy. We'll be back. As a matter of fact, that's a great segue into what we're going to talk about next hour, what I'm going to talk about next hour. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 past the hour. You know, I thought about leaving this next topic to until tomorrow, but it's just too bizarre. I say tomorrow because Wednesday night is church night, but Brad Friedman will be filling in for me tomorrow, so I won't be here. And if I'm not here, this I have to wait till next week. So I want to. I don't know. There may be no connection here between insanity and religion in this story, but yeah, Wednesday night is church night here on the Malloy Show, in recognition of the fact that on Wednesday nights when I was a kid, it was prayer meeting night. But the story is just very quick. It occurred in Northern Italy. It's from the Huffington Post. A 46-year-old man told doctors he was hearing voices. Okay, so crazy, schizophrenic, yada yada. Now that was after he ripped out his own eyeballs. But where it occurred was at a Sunday church service. So he's in church, and all of a sudden he hears voices. And he rips out his eyeballs. I mean, literally rips them out. He'll never see again. And according to Huffington Post, this guy who was born in the UK but spent most of his life in the Catholic stronghold of Italy, this guy used his bare hands to tear out his eyeballs just as the priest began conducting mass. The man then collapsed on the floor in a pool of his own blood. An Italian newspaper quoted it this way, or quoted somebody who's at the service. The man in the back of the nave started tearing at his face, and I realized he was gouging out his eyes. I called for assistance, and the paramedics were quickly at the scene. Oh, this was the priest who reported this. He was taken away. And then I carried on celebrating Mass, but a lot of people left because they were so shocked by what they had seen. End quote. Well, I would hope so. Anyway, the guy was taken to the hospital, and he'll live, but doctors say he will never be able to see again. Well, I guess not if you rip your eyes out. I mean, you know. The emergency physician who treated this poor bastard said he... 26 years of medical practicing medicine, I've never seen anything like this. Well, no. So, I don't know. Is there any connection there? Is that religious fanaticism? Or was the guy just terribly, terribly sick? The fact that it happened in a church leads me to believe the voices in the church started, or, you know, the voices that were conjured by the priest to this guy. Told him to tear out his eyeballs. Either way, it's madness, which I think is a pretty clear definition of religion. Just insanity. Oh, I know. That so pisses off some people that listen to this program. And I'm not talking about right-wing nutballs. I'm just talking about regular folks that listen to this program. And because I get the emails and they say, you know, why don't you leave that part of it alone? We really like what you say, except when you come to the religious crazy. Well, I'm sorry. Religion makes people weak, indecisive, fearful, terrified of their own existence. Am I living right, or am I going to burn in hell? You know, it's crapola. And I think people could focus more on the here and now, which God knows we see. I use the expression, sure, but that doesn't mean anything. People could focus more on the here and now, which is exactly what we need right now. We don't need to, you know, I think about all the people who are told, don't worry about it. Just your reward comes after you're dead. Ah, oh, for Christ's sake. I see. There I go again. That's insane. It's madness. So that's my biggest beef with religion right now. Other than the fact that it's just nonsense, but the fact that it completely diverts people from living their lives in a way that is productive here. I mean, so many people, well, I don't care about the planet because, you know, I'm soon going to rapture in my underwear. I'm just going to lose all my clothes and go floating naked up to God. You know, newsflash. No, you're not. You really aren't. I mean, you're just not going to do that. So that's, you know, that's my complaint. Oh, well, that's usually a Wednesday night topic, and it's only Tuesday, so. The demonstrations, the Occupy Wall Street resistance movement that has begun in this country and is spreading, as all good organic movements should. I'm a little bit concerned at this point because all of a sudden I see something happening that was laid out in coherent terms here so that I can share it with you at WSWS.org. And maybe you've begun to notice it too. We talked about this the other night, I think last night, about how there is no leadership, and according to some of the people who are now speaking for the movement, allegedly no politics. Well, there is politics behind this. It's a political attitude that inspired the Occupy Wall Street movement to begin. So to declare that there's no politics is ridiculous. I don't know who's declaring that, but you're starting to hear that about this movement. As it starts to attract much broader support, what this movement is, and this is not my definition. I think it displays this definition. I'm not trying to impose anything on this. I'm fascinated by it, but it's part of the growing opposition in the U.S. and around the world, as the WSWS points out, to the policies of the financial elite and the political representatives of that financial elite. Growing opposition to that. And I agree, that's its politics. And now similar demonstrations are being organized across the country. And as the WSWS points out, the reaction of the government to the demonstrations, and in this case, it's the U.S. government, and the local governments, the reaction of the government to the demonstrations is an indication of the fear within the ruling class that these demonstrations could spark a broader popular mobilization under the conditions of this economic downturn that we're all trapped in. The use of pepper spray against peaceful protesters, the rounding people up, caging them behind this orange fencing, all the arrests, 800 arrests, while people were demonstrating or trying to cross to take who knows what happened on the Brooklyn Bridge. But and in contrast, we talked about this, in contrast to how the police are responding to this and busting people and arresting people, like we mentioned last night, to this point, not a single leading official of a major U.S. bank or financial institution has been held accountable, jailed, locked up, put on trial for the worst financial manipulation and therefore disaster since the Great Depression. Nothing. Not a thing has happened. The protesters are being arrested after being beaten up, after being brutally manhandled. But the organizations that cause this, nothing, nothing. They're making gifts to the New York City Police Department. More when we come back. Talking about a revolution sounds. We're people gonna rise up, get their share. We're gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. 'Cause finally
Hi, truth seekers. It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So, while the New York City Police Department is determined, it appears, to arrest as many of the Occupy Wall Street protesters as they possibly can, and in many instances, those arrests are based on provocation on the part of the police, just look at the videos. Just look at the videos. You know, somebody in uniform comes up and pepper sprays you and you react, uh-oh, resisting arrest or assaulting an officer or criminal trespass, off you go. The attitude of the authorities is the attitude of the authorities as it always is. The protesters would be arrested, but the people against whom they're protesting, the thugs, the criminals, the officials of these banks and financial institutions that literally stole trillions of dollars out of, everybody's life, out of home equity, out of savings accounts, out of stock portfolios, out of retirement accounts, all of it just ripped away by the elite one half of 1% who will not be satisfied until they have everything. Somebody asked the other day, who's going to be the first trillionaire? Yeah, we're watching for that, aren't we? So nobody's being held accountable for the worst scam since the Great Depression, these banking bastards. But the young people protesting, step onto the roadway and you're going to jail. What? It's Sunday. Yeah, step onto the roadway. Go ahead. And a lot of people did, thinking that they were being given permission, according to all the reports. The white shirts, so-called, on that bridge seemed to give the impression that on Brooklyn Bridge, okay, you can walk out here. And then as soon as people walked out there, kaboom. And the other, of course, the video that shows one of the white shirts or whatever, with a bullhorn telling people to get off the roadway. And when you have a couple thousand people who are chanting and beating drums and ringing chimes and so on and so forth, and you're 10 feet back from the guy with the bullhorn and you don't hear it, and then all of a sudden they come at you and start arresting you. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? So when you look at the fact that public treasuries have been looted for trillions of dollars, for one purpose, to bail out homeowners? No, to cover the debts of the bad banks. Remember what the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation is all about. That's not to protect you. That's to protect the bank. Now, if you have, what is it, up to 100 grand? Or I don't even know anymore. It really doesn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter to me. But if you have up to $100,000 in a bank and the bank goes belly up, the bank's deposits are protected. If you happen to be one of those depositors, ooh, okay. Now, somebody will say, well, Malloy, then that effect is the same. Well, maybe so. But the law is designed to protect the banks, not to protect you. But here's the thing that that's starting to get to me. And we mentioned this last night. Media are starting to demand, all right, who's your leaders? What are your goals? What are your politics? We want to talk to the leaders. An attempt to identify, and we had a caller last night. I forget who that was, Kathy, but he made a very succinct and salient point that once they can define, once the people out there at the microphones can define the politics or the leadership or what the goals are of this movement, then it can be marginalized. Then it can be that they can focus, they being the power structure, can focus around a particular demand and start to marginalize it and destroy it and eat it alive. And then the movement starts to fall apart. This is usually what happens. Think back over the past 30 or 40 years, the demonstrations, whether it was free speech movement all the way up to the anti-nuke movement, whatever it was. And think about how this tactic was employed. Okay, what's your objective? Well, our objective, the unspoken objective, was to stop the madness. The madness that was eating the country alive, this capitalist destruction that was going on. But the demonstrators would focus on one aspect, the nuclear industry. So then all of a sudden, we became the anti-nuke demonstrators, when in fact, the objective was much larger than that. I think these demonstrators have looked back over the history of demonstrations in this country and resistance in this country and have realized we cannot be identified with a particular objective. Because once that happens, bingo, then we can be marginalized, we can be ridiculed, and the industry that media says we are targeting can then mount an offensive against us. If it's the atmospheric polluters, if it's the oil industry, if it's the nuclear industry, if it's the banking industry, if it's this, if it's that, then it can be very, the response, the millions and billions of dollars, whatever it takes by that industry to destroy the resistance can begin to happen. More on this when we come back. Leave the program tonight utterly convinced that I've lost my mind and have now become not only anti-democratic party but also anti-union organizing. Please reconsider, because that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is what seems to be a furious attempt to do a couple of things here. First of all, identify the goals and objectives and the politics and the leadership of the Occupy Wall Street movement. Why that is so necessary, you can say, well, that's just part of the American experience. You know, who are the leaders? What's your goal? You know, goal or everything has to be goal oriented. There has to be somebody in charge, right? Okay, that's A. B. All of a sudden, the desire, the insistence of certain Democratic Party aligned organizations to get involved. Just one quick question, and that is, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be a cynical bastard, but where were the union leadership? Where was the union leadership at the beginning of this? Where were the superstars of the Democratic Party who have so far deigned to show up in Lower Manhattan? Where were they at the beginning? In other words, let me turn around. Why has resistance to this capitalist monster that is eating this country alive, why has that resistance not shown up at the beginning with Democratic, with union leadership? Why now? What is the objective here? Now, before I sound too paranoid, there are two questions for me, and that's what I'm talking about here. Are the union leaders now climbing aboard this Occupy Wall Street train because they are sympathetic and they want to see something happen, or are they trying to neutralize it? And that's the question that's been eating at me. And it started with this absolute insistence, first through the media, who are your leaders? What are your objectives? And then the reporters or the editorial writers or the talking heads would answer their own question. Well, there is no leadership. Well, there doesn't seem to be a goal. When the goal is so obvious. But unless it is clearly defined, this is where Chomsky needs to step in and settle this. You know, the linguist, the person that most of us will listen to. Well, not on every issue, but at least he could sort this out, couldn't he? Now, I understand that Chomsky has expressed support of this, but it's the kind of low-key professorial support that you would expect from someone like Chomsky on an issue like this. You know, he's not going to get out and link hands with Jesse Jackson and start marching up 7th Avenue. That's not going to happen. And as WSWS.org points out, many of the groups involved in Wall Street demonstrations have echoed the position of the indignados of Spain and Greece, that there should be no politics and no leadership. Now, the call for no politics amounts to a rejection of a principled and coherent political alternative to bourgeois politics and the capitalist two-party system. That is, the call for no politics means no socialist politics. Right? In other words, as WSWS points out, it plays directly into the hands of the Democratic Party, which will move to fill the political vacuum. Be careful to the folks who are out there demonstrating, the folks who have decided that they've had enough, when in fact what they are saying, and they know this, nobody needs to identify this, not me, not you, not anybody. What they are saying is they have had enough of the capitalist system. Enough! Because that's what has been the destructive force that brought us to where we are. Can I get an objection to that? Can I get a coherent rejection of that statement? Anybody? It is predatory, global, neoliberal capitalism that has brought us to where we are. There's no argument there. If you still have any kind of brain power left, take a look at the past 60 years. Here we are. So without stating it, and I'm not trying to identify anybody's objective, but it is what it is. Take a look at this demonstration. Listen to what the people who are cornered by the TV cameras and the writers, how they're responding. Listen to what they're saying. So all of a sudden, there are certain interest groups, most of which are part of this, one way or the other, the corrupted two-party system in this country. And it goes way beyond J.P. Morgan Chase that made the big multi-million-dollar donation the other day to the New York City Police Department right before the demonstrations and the marches began? Any connection there? That's the obvious part. You know who your enemy is. But it's your friends you have to watch out for. You know what I'm saying? I'll see you tomorrow night. Brad Friedman will be here tomorrow night. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
You won't believe what